Perfect. Good morning, everybody. So basically, I'll follow Alison's lead, so to say, and I'll focus really on two topics. The first one would be cross-sections, differential cross-sections in particular, and specifically scales and scale settings. So that's going to be really the main part of my discussion. I'll also mention a few thoughts, if you wish, on the top math. Nothing like an in-depth discussion or anything like that. It's too big of a topic, and that's going to be it. I hope to finish on time. Okay, so basically the top pair production at 10 and a wall, it's at the level of the total cross-section. There is a very impressive agreement, as we all know, 4-5% level, starting from the Tevatron down there at energy, going up to 13 TeV or so. The interesting thing is that the moment the luminosity in the 13 TeV is already the dominant uncertainty, basically. By taking the TT bar over the Z ratio, there is a very nice agreement for the ratio with...
CMS, I think CMS just put out a result where the luminosity is down to 2.5%.
2.5, yeah.
Okay.
We don't know why.
I decided on it yesterday. That's real time. I don't know that it yesterday. It could be. What I think is very interesting is that the ratio, which is a very interesting also kind of crosstalk between different processes, if you wish, which I think it would be good to take some further going into the future. Basically, this luminosity error cancels, and there is quite a good agreement for most of the PDF sets. Of course, that's PDF set dependent. But that's really a different topic. The total cross-section is just one number, in a sense, with errors. So the question is, how much mileage can one get out of it? It turns out there is surprisingly much one can do with it. For example, one can compare the total cross-section itself, theory versus experiment. One can do top mass extraction, and that was mentioned in Alison's talk. There is alpha X extraction, which has been done. PDF constraining has been done. Even excluding new physics models, quite a lot. In fact, it's mostly used for normalization of the TT bar background in most searches. So as you can see, there are many applications, and in fact, one can wonder, can they all be independent? Of course, perhaps not. So in order to understand what matters and what not, one maybe should look at the errors at the moment. Basically, the main contributors of error to the total cross-section is the missing higher order corrections, which is estimated from scale variation, is something like 3% after including the summation. Without the summation, it's maybe 5%. The PDF itself is something like 2-3%. Alpha is, I don't know, it depends how you define that, but let's say between 1.5 and maybe 3%. And the top mass itself, these are just parametric uncertainties, it's something like 3%. So basically what one can see is that at the moment we have a number of sources that contribute uncertainty to the total cross-section. Of course, it is very interesting, but if one wants to really start to seriously disentangle these effects which I mentioned previously, masses, alphas, PDFs, and so on, new physics, one has to go differential. So basically the future would be about understanding differential top production. The story started a few years ago with this plot from CMS, the so-called PT, top PT discrepancy. Basically, if one looks at the normalized PT distribution at the top, one sees that the shapes are kind of different between various Monte Carlos and the data. Again, Alison was discussing this extensively, so I don't know, I don't have to go in detail, but it has a number of implications. Of course, one should also keep in mind that the so-called top quark level observables are really not, in a sense, observables. They are kind of inferred from the data using Monte Carlo, so there is some Monte Carlo effect in there already. So, at any rate, any discrepancy between the standard model top quark prediction and the measurements, basically, in a way, they test how well the Monte Carlos describe top production. In that sense, this is important because the same Monte Carlos are then used in all kinds of processes everywhere at the LHC. And so, a significant discrepancy here could kind of, how should I put it? affect our confidence, basically, in how well the Monte Carlos work in a way. And so in that sense, this is an important thing to resolve and understand. Inclusions of NNO corrections is one of the main possible culprits in resolving such a discrepancy, because these are effects which are not included in Monte Carlos. Basically, of course, there are other effects which one would like to understand better, like tuning of the Monte Carlos, but this includes completely orthogonal issues like treatment of color, recoil, hadronization, etc. So basically, the idea is that one should try to understand the first source, the higher order corrections, before one starts to play with this kind of effects. What we find is that inclusion of the NNO QCD corrections basically systematically improves the agreement with data. It does have an important effect on the shape, indeed. So if you look at the normalized, and we're essentially only looking at normalized distributions here, so the overall normalization is removed from the plot. The NNO here, the lower orders, are not included in this plot, but basically it does important shifts and improve the agreement with data, basically agrees with ATLAS and CMS well within the errors of the theory and the measurements. This is for ATV. Similarly, basically the situation is similar also for the invariant mass of the TT bar. Again, these are relatively old plots from late last year, as well as the results that I show. I just wanted to show two more plots, kind of show off plots, if you wish, more like for theory. Basically, these are the same predictions as you saw before, but this is just very fine binning in the range that we have computed, and these are published results. So as you can see, the calculation, the quality is very high, basically, all the way up to the maximum PT, which we had computed here.
So there's a breakdown of perturbation theory at very small PTT?
I mean, one can see it here, as well as the invariant mass, yes. So these are thresholds.
The
reservation
will affect the 0 to 50 bins that were shown earlier very much.
Sorry?
But you don't think resummation will affect the distribution at the level of, that it was binned in the experimental comparison, which was 0 to 50?
This effect is on. This is likely due to, I'm almost certain that this is due to Coulomb effects. So if you increase this bin to 50 GeV, this gets washed out and you don't see it anymore. So if the bins are wide enough as they are in the experimental analysis, you only see in very small bins. And in fact, we have done some more work with Paul Onoson and Brian Weber on that, trying to understand this better. So basically, you can include by hand, so to say, in Palkek, for example, these leading Coulomb terms, and you see that they indeed have this effect. So this is by far and large clearly due to that. We would like to understand this better, but that would be kind of relevant for future work. Again, this is in the invariant mass distribution, basically the same kind of effect. Okay, so these are all results which were published until basically late in the last year. So the main kind of, not critique really, I mean, this is perhaps a strong word, but people were kind of asking for improvement, is that we have used in this calculation, so to say, static scales, fixed scales, non-dynamic scales. Basically, factorization and the normalization scale have been set to the top mass, and of course varied around that. This is, in fact, okay, as we stressed, if one uses limited kinematical ranges, and this is the reasons why in these plots that I showed, the PT is only up to 400, and the invariant mass is only calculated up to 1,000 GeV for that particular reason. Of course, that's not where we want to stay. We want to go into the multi-TV regime, and for this one, clearly requires dynamic of scales. So the question, and this is really what I'm going to discuss, how to choose them. Not that I have a magical answer, but it's going to be kind of hard trials and attempts, and basically I'll present the results and our findings here. So, as far as dynamical scales are concerned, various things have been used in the past. Typically, they involve the transverse mass of the top, which is defined this way. So, it is not necessarily very clear what means best scale choice, right? In a sense, one has to define that. That's kind of the starting point in this discussion. Whatever this scale function is, it's clear that for low PT, for let's say PT goes to zero, it has to be proportional to the top mass with some constant in front, which is to be determined. And for a large PT, it should be also proportional to the PT itself, again, with some trifactor there. How to fix them, it's we'll discuss. We have done some quite some, in fact, experimentation in the last maybe 3-4 months. I mean, pretty much that's all we've been doing. Mainly the criteria that we have been following, the criterion, I would say, is to try to get maximally fast convergence going from NLO to NNLO. Again, similarly, ideally from LO to NLO, separately for the total inclusive cross-section and also differentially for any distribution. Now, the low PT part of the spectrum basically is not independent. It is essentially constrained by the total cross-section. But the high PT is kind of totally open problem. We'll see there is no really experimental handle at large PT at the moment. Basically, yes?
So if you get maximally fast convergence from NLO to NLO, but what you're really trying to do is estimate the effects of higher order things, does that really guarantee that that's the right scale of choice to optimize what the NQ NLO contributions will be?
I mean, it's not a guarantee, of course. And this statement, I mean, our results are affected, for example, by even choice of PDF sets. Different PDF sets actually return even different results. I mean, they don't qualitatively change the picture, but still there are differences at that point. But somehow, thinking about it and looking at other processes and so on, it seems to us that this is the best criterion, which kind of makes sense, reasonable. Somehow it turns out that the scales that you would think maybe are best indeed seems to be best based on this criterion, a posteriori, not. Also, not only the convergence is best, but also the scale error that they return is smallest as well. And so for us, this is something which makes sense. Of course, it doesn't mean that there is no yet another scale out there that one could possibly think of and may work better. There is unlikely to be a magic bullet anyway, as far as choices of scales are concerned. And we tried quite a few number of those. I'll show you the basically for yourself.
I have a question. Why is the naive one empty rather than 2MT?
Sorry?
Why isn't the naive choice empty as opposed to 2MT?
Right.
Because it produces two top versions.
Yes, yes. I mean, that's a good question indeed. So somehow the practice shows that MT is better. What we've actually find, we should go to MT over 2, in fact. It's even better than that. And that's what I will present in the following. This is like the Higgs, for example. Should you take the Higgs, which would correspond to 2 times the top mass, versus Higgs over 2, which would correspond to the top mass. And also in Higgs physics, in fact, the parallel is quite strong. I have a slide on that between what we find in top physics and Higgs physics.
Any parallel to Drell-Young, where you use the mass of the pair as opposed to half the mass of the pair, quarter mass of the pair?
I mean, as in top physics, also in other processes, different groups have tend to use different scales, in fact. So it's not like, there is always just one scale that people use, right? So, and this is one of the messages that I would like kind of to take here. Basically, one of the conclusions, if you want, of that study. This is not, I mean, many of the things are specific to top physics. Think that basically the lessons are much broader. You know, this is something that one has to try to do also in other processes as well.
So for jet cross-section, single jet inclusive cross-section, T of the jet divided by 2 seems to be the best, it's just as you said.
I don't have it on the slides, but indeed, somehow in parallel, what we find for tops, it's basically what is people tend to do also for jets, tends to work best.
Are these comments about 1F being the best scale choice for a TT bar, are they true both at LHC and Tevatron?
We didn't check for the Tevatron.
Which is QQ bar as opposed to...
Right. It should be a kinematical effect, so that should not likely be... We have not checked for the Tevatron, so this I don't know. We checked for 8 and 13 TeV at the OHC, and really there's no difference, so...
They're both blue-blue dominated already.
Yeah, right. I think that this should be a kinematics as opposed to, so even OHC at 2 TeV, for example, would have the same conclusion as the Tevatron, whatever that conclusion is. But we have not checked for the Tevatron.
You know, like in Higgs, I think sometimes these low scales are mocking up threshold resummations. Like if you look at the NQ-LO and you it wants kind of wants a smaller scale. And then I don't know, I saw one plot of the high order threshold resummation. It's much flatter.
Mm-hmm. Yes, very good point. I mean, I have slides. No.
I think over quite a wide range, so either quark dominated or blue dominated.
So when I use PDF is a blue jet the route, I have can I get a system which scale to use? So
no, we should just include it in some estimate of the error. I'll choose different scales for different processes. Whatever is your best judgment. But you should never think that choosing your scale makes it the magic scale and now there's no error.
Yeah. That's very much the case.
If you have to extract it using one scale, and then you try to pick cut cross section, and you change the scale.
You're only in trouble if you use the PDF for some process and then you predict that process. You can get it exactly right if you apply the same program that you used to fit the PDF. That's sort of cheating.
So just a comment, PDFs, they don't have scale uncertainties. They're just quoted SAR. So I mean, they should, in different groups, they do choose different scales. So CTEC traditionally used PT over half compared to other groups using PT for JS, for example. So there is a mess a little bit there.
Yes, the PDF fitting, I think, really ought to put in some more theoretical errors instead of just experimental, systematic errors.
The problem is one of double counting when you go back to predict the same process again.
Yeah, so
a smaller process.
Predicting the same process, then it's a little dicey as to what you're doing.
But do you always use the same scale for the factorization or the hard process?
Yes. So here we set the MICO, and for the central predictions, we always set the MICO indeed. When we estimate the scale error, we vary them independently within a factor of 2, and that's how we determine the error. But for the central value, they're always set equal, and this set in particular, they'll always be equal. Thanks.
So for the plots you showed earlier on, you took them different. From each one, right? And then you took the envelope. You had some
blocks. Yes, for the envelope, always. The envelope is always, maybe, I don't know if there is not. But in every bin, they're varied independently, in every bin, subject to a restriction that they should not be factor of 2, the ratio of the envelope should not be, is between half and 2, so it's not too big, right? You don't want a balloon, so to say. And this is how the error is defined. But the central value is they're set equal. So let's actually start to present some results first. So let's start with the total cross-section simply because it's the most, first it's a single number so it's easy to understand, and second there is a lot of data, a lot of experience, and so on. So so this is, so what is here? What is computed? ATV, this is the mass, this is the, this is all computed with the mTOP, just fixed scale. And the PDF set is MSTW 2008. So basically what you see here is the leading order result as a function of mu with respect to some central, which mu naught in this case is the top mass. So this is the next to leading order, the red one is the next to leading order, and the green one is the resumed NNLO with soft gluons on top of it. So this is the standard choice when MT is taken to be the central kind of value. And this is the value which we take as a reference point to which to compare the resumed NNLO cross-section, basically. So you see that if you start decreasing the scale mu, basically there is a point of where, this is, as you see, PDF set dependent, where the leading, next to leading, in fact, the resumed as well, they basically coincide in a point. So this is a point where basically the higher order corrections are smallest. Interestingly, if you take the NNLO result at this point, it's only like 2-3 per mil different than the resumed cross-section, which is basically what Lance was saying. It's numerically, there is no resummation, and yet numerically it agrees with it.
The position of the points in the
sample, or? Sorry, I cannot hear.
There are some points.
Yes?
The position of the points is...
Ah, you mean these points?
Yes.
No, no, this is just to distinguish the curves. Sorry, these points have no significance. Bad choice. Everybody asks me about this point. But when it's black and white, I like too many dots. Sorry. So this is the same now plot if you take NNPDF 3.0. So basically, you see what happens. So the leading order, of course, flies all over the place. The NLO, the blue one, changes too. But the red one, the NNLO, the two NNLOs is essentially identical, as well as the recent results. So if you go to NNPDF in the same point here, which is below, this is how the top mass, and this is maybe 0.6 or 0.7. Here, of course, there is, again, the effect of the resummation is zero, basically, and there is maybe, 2% effect going from NLO to NNLO, which is, again, a very small number. Anyway, this is...
You change the order of the PDF sets if you do this?
No, not the order. They're all... you mean how we do it? Yes.
Yeah.
Leading order is with leading order. NLO with NLO, NNLO with NNLO. Okay. So in that sense, it's done consistently.
Okay.
So my point is that this is an indication already that even with a fixed scale, somehow you want to take not the top mass, but smaller scales than that. Now, this is taken from this paper, which is basically the latest paper with NTLO predictions about Higgs production. And here one can see, in fact, exactly the same curves. So they are identical. So in a sense, we were looking forward to these plots. In fact, we had our plots even before that. I was really curious how they compare. And it's really nice that they're essentially identical. So, of course, if you ignore the leading order Higgs kind of and start coming from the next leading order, as if it was the leading order for the top, you see that each curve basically exactly corresponds as a behavior to the one that we have over there. And this point of maximum convergence, basically, it's again, this is M Higgs over 2, which typically is taken, but in fact, in that sense, you have to go a little bit lower, just like in the case of top, in order to find this point. So in the sense, they're really, really behaving the same way. One more thing which I find very interesting is that now if you start adding a resummation, you see that there is some the fixed order cross section, when you increase the scale, they tend to go down. But when you include the resummation, actually it behaves kind of funnily, goes up. So the same thing we also find in the case of top. When you include the resummation, basically goes very high. And this is true only if you include next to leading order, log resummation. If it's next to leading log or leading log, it's not like that. It starts to go down. So that's affected by the logarithmic accuracy of the resummation. And basically, the same story one can see also here in the case of the Higgs. So I think that the parallels between the two processes are very interesting.
I have a question. I mean, you're using different PDFs in each case, right?
Yes. Yes.
So, and abstracted from the same data, but if you want to see which, you're mixing up two different effects, and you don't really know which is causing it. So shouldn't you sort of fix the higher NNL or PDF and then see what happens when you change the order, just to see,
yes,
to understand which effect comes from what?
Yes, I mean, this is one PDF in different orders, right? This is NNPDF. This is next to leading order, next to next, and there's some result.
No, are the PDF changing or the...
No, the orders are changing for the same PDF.
Oh, you're keeping the same PDF. Which order is the PDF?
Everything is PDF, the same PDF. Of course, the PDF changes from leading to next to leading to next to next to leading order. The PDF set itself.
You're not changing the PDFs.
No, we are keeping the same PDF, the order of the PDF.
It's a hard cross-section whose functional form changes, and it's supposed to match the factorization scale dependence in the PDF. And that's the logic for making the order of the PDF match the order in the hard cross-section, to try to keep that compensation happening successively higher orders in the factorization scale dependence.
Okay, so here are some basically scales that we've been using. So at the end of the day, somehow we settled that for all the distributions except for the PT at the top, we use HT over 4, where HT in this case is defined as the sum of the transverse masses of the top and the anti-top. point. Well, for the PT at the top, basically what we use is the transverse mass of the top divided by 2, but computed in the following way. For the top single top inclusive, we use the MT of the top itself. For the anti-top inclusive, we use the scale of the anti-top. All the measurements at DOHC actually are for the average top or anti-top, so they do not really distinguish between top and anti-top in none of these measurements. So basically, to do that, we a posteriori average the two, the top and the anti-top single inclusive distributions, which is basically what is also done in jets, in the sense if you have the leading and the subleading jets. It's really the direct analogy of the input, way of computing the scale. One thing we've tried, and I'll show you a plot, we tried also the invariant mass of the TT bar. It has been done, used in the past. I'll show some plots, especially in the resummation papers. We know that somehow the MTT doesn't work well, but we tried MT over 2, MTT over 4 even. None of those really works well. So somehow it's not a good scale. Although one could maybe at least in order estimate somehow that it may not be bad, but actually it doesn't work well.
It doesn't work as far as convergence is concerned?
Yes, yeah, I'll show you plots a bit later. I'm just mentioning now before I show the plots. We tried something that's been used by Dietmar Denner and company, which is the geometric average of the two MTs of the tops. Instead of one half their sum, basically a square root of their products. It's essentially identical in the cases we tried. We used HT prime, which is like HT, but plus also all final other final state partons, like the emitted jets. It doesn't work well. Basically, our conclusions for 8 and 13 TV are identical. And this is always checked, not Emmetron, as I said.
So HT includes jets, or is just made out of the tops?
HT is just the tops. Basically, our observables are the tops, right? So
if you have a very fast top and it radiates a collinear gluon,
we can
distinguish,
yes.
HT changes by an appreciable amount.
Yes, if that's a big effect, yes. Eventually,
it's always
it would
cut off by the top mass.
Yes,
so
of course, yes. In this case, it is. And suddenly,
really
if you go to like multi TV, this kind of effects would become important.
Yeah.
But how much multi TV, 2, 3, I don't know. I mean, there have been some preliminary studies. And I have a comment on this in my very last slide. Eventually, one wants to compute top jets, which we'll eventually do, right, in these cases. Right? But we're not there yet. Gavin?
So I want to make a comment, but I'm not sure when I'll make. Maybe later.
Sure. Anytime, it's all right.
Thank you. A bit of suspense.
Good. OK, so this is basically, so what is here it says what is being used. So this is the total cross section again, now computed with scale HT over 2. This is 1, so HT over 4 is what we decided to pick, is corresponds to here at 1 half. So basically we don't have a resummation, so we have only leading order, next to leading, and next to next leading order calculation. And they're all normalized to the resummed cross section with fixed scale MT, which is somehow become the default value that everybody, if you want, uses. So basically, you see that if we choose this scale, basically the difference between the next to leading and the next to leading order is really kind of small. This is what, 2% effect or something like that. If we go here, that would be many, many times bigger effect, basically. And again, the value of the next to leading order at this point is what, less than 0.5% higher than the resum cross section at everybody. So it's essentially the same. Now, this is for NMPDF 3.0, and this is for NSTW 2008. Basically, you see.
But you change the order of the PDF?
Always, yes, always. Leading with leading, next to next, next with next, next to next with next to next, always. We have always done, maybe with the exception of one port, once to just see what happens. But I think this is the right way to do it, because that's how they're defined.
I disagree with that.
But okay. I mean, this is how the PDFs are defined, right?
Well, you can imagine the PDFs are determined from lattice.
What?
You can imagine the PDFs were determined, and one day they will, maybe they will be determined from lattice perturbation. Well, that's not lattice perturbation. From lattice, non-perturbative from lattice. So for infinite order. And then the whole question of what matching the order of the PDF to the order of the calculation becomes moot. So in a sense, you could argue that the PDF is a is really a universal thing, and we should always put in the best approximation one has to study separately the convergence of the calculation, rather than mixing in something. This difference here is about the convergence of DIS, which has nothing to do with TOPS. So you're mixing in the properties of convergence of DIS with the properties of convergence of TOPS, and I think you can get misled by that.
I think you should use the best PDF, like the highest order PDF, give it fixed, and then change everything else to see what happens.
At least you can make the argument
that you can use the best PDF you can, which is the highest order. Yeah.
There's no consensus about that, as you can see,
but I would agree with Galvin on that. So PDF is a physical object, not quite physical, but it's a certain operator in QCDF, but really fixed operator.
But the PDF depends as much as what...
best you can, which would be next to next to leading order.
Yes, but of course, the PDF itself is not physical, and it depends on how we do the calculation. Could be MSBAR, could be DIS scheme, could be whatever I want.
Yeah, scheme.
Exactly. So there is no really, it depends as much, by us, from us, basically what the PDF is. It's not an observable. I mean, this is a question, can I add, higher order terms in my predictions? The answer is, in principle, yes, right? But they could be very large. And then the question becomes, really, is it a good thing? So, for example, doing a leading order calculation with NNO PDF, you basically introduce NNO terms, could be significant.
Well, but it would be interesting to see also the plot.
We have plotted that. I mean, not in this plot, but basically the error bands, they tend to go towards the very, very end, becomes much more one-sided and I think much bigger. Somehow they don't look right, but okay, I can show you the result.
But the next thing I'm not, when you people do a fit in NLO and NLO, they have uncertainties that come from the fitting procedure.
Right.
So it may be just accidental. The two PDFs are different because they're different fits, different orders. But that necessarily means that they're reproducible because when they do different orders, they make different choices as to which data sets to use, which not to use. I mean, they're not always doing the same thing.
Yeah.
So I agree that if you fix the PDF and study the scale, and then if you fix the scale and study the PDF, at least you know what's going on.
I don't know if that's so obvious. I mean the
PDFs... I don't understand what is going on.
Yeah, well, I mean, first, different PDF groups do completely different things, right? So at least, and that includes not only data, includes many things like threshold effects, heavy masses, I don't know what, right? So these are all kinds of things that are different. Then you go from leading to next to leading order, at least supposedly this is a perturbative difference, but again, matching thresholds and things like that could also make a big impact going from leading to next to next to next, for example. And so how do you disentangle these things? I don't know.
Anyway. I think this is that. Just saying, if you present the result, if people can understand what changes came from the PDF order and what changes came from the calculation order.
Yeah.
I'm not saying you should choose one or the other. I'm saying if you look at it, at least you try to figure out what's going on.
I mean,
I don't really know what those things mean because two things are changing at the same time.
They are, but also when the PDFs are being fit, they're fit to the corresponding order, right? The leading with leading, next to next to next, which also suggests that maybe this is the right, at least to me, suggests that this is the right way to use it.
Just to add to that, so there is also a difference in the data sets used in the PDF fits.
Yes.
If you go for next to next to leading order, for example, and then PDF, they remove explicitly some Z data which are potentially more affected by higher order corrections, which are unknown. So therefore, you compare also different data sets. I actually agree with you that matching order is probably the best, but I think it would be very interesting to see the fixed and then lower PDF and
this
comparison for
it's easy.
Just to understand, I'm not saying it's worse.
It's no problem. We didn't plot it, but okay. If there's interest, of course we can do that. Sure. So basically now this is a comparison slide where it's all next to next to leading order calculations. The green one is the usual resumed one, which we still keep with the fixed. Mu equals MT scale, and this is now the black one is this HT prime. When in HT, it also includes all additional radiation. Could in the virtual case there is no radiation, of course. In the real virtual, there is one parton. In the double real, there are two partons. So you see, it behaves at NLO very, very strange. This ET, this is this geometrical average, which is basically the same as you can see. The red and the blue are essentially indistinguishable. And this is just the fixed order when the top mass is taken to be the average value, the scale. And basically, when we make this choice, all of these guys kind of tend to group in here very nicely, so it really doesn't make tremendously much difference which one you pick. And anyway, this is the one that we eventually choose. Now, it's more interesting once one goes into differential distributions. So these are plots, literally hot from the oven, based on, this is the average top PT, as you can see. There are different ranges. This is up to 1,400, and this is up to 2,000 at ATV. So this is very high statistics, very high quality calculation, which is done with a dedicated effort in order to populate the tails, so the tails are well populated, so we can even go beyond that, which is not really needed for ATV, but would be, for example, for 13T. As you can see here, the MC error is very, very small. So basically, what you can find here is the ratio with respect to for the PT MT over to the transfers mass, not M top, but MT, the transfers mass of the top divided by 2, which is our preferred kind of choice for the transfers for the PT of the top. It is with red. So this is the central value. Everything is normalized to it, of course, and this is the scale error. The blue one is HT over 4. As you can see, the two are very, very similar. I mean, the maximum difference is like less than 2% in here. So really, the central values are not really that different. And this is if you take the top mass, just fixed scales, post ordering scales. As you can see, basically, in fact, it fares better than one would naively expect. And these are the absolute predictions for the corresponding K factors here for each of these three scales. So basically, a K factor which is close to flat and 1 would be kind of better. And this is what we want to choose. So in that sense, if you look at the K factors, you can say that the red one, our preferred choice, is better than the blue one, which is HT over 4. Another indication for this is this is the same thing, just extended range, where both are plotted with their scale error, which is derived the same way. So basically, you see that starting from the mid-range, I don't know, 500 or so, the scale error for HT over 4 tends to increase significantly, unlike MT over 2. So again, these are the same K factors. So basically, I think from these plots, it's clear that MT over 2, which is anyway what one has always been kind of choosing in the past for the PT of the top at least, it's better than, let's say, HT over 4. So this is basically the same thing for the invariant mass of the pair. Let's say here it goes up to 3 TeV. Basically, on the left and then several following slides, I'll keep on the left the same plot here. This is a calculation that, in the logarithmic of the absolute cross-section, and these are the K factors here. And the scale which is used, the default PDF set we take is NNPDF 3.0 for this plot, and the scale is HT over 4 on the left. On the right is HT over 2, basically 2 times larger scale. So basically, you see what happens. If you take HT over 2, the K factors increase, and the scale error also increases.
Just for your notation, you have LO, NLO, and NLO.
Yes.
But in a ratio, like in the bottom, you have NLO over LO. So why you have
two bands?
So
two bands. And there should be only one band, NLO over LO. So only one.
No, each one of them has error. It's just that each one of those is divided by the central value of the leading order result.
So the LO has an uncertainty band relative to its central scale.
You take the leading order and divide it by its central scale.
Any lower of any lower, I mean, so what is the blue line?
This is the next leading order.
Yeah.
and this is the red is the NNLO divided by NLO.
So it's a ratio to this,
it's just to make it easy to visualize the relative effect of the two. That's all it is. So here on the next slide, what is plotted is the top mass and t. Basically, you see what happens. On this plot, here you can see what happens if we use the empty t, the invariant mass divided by 4. Basically, the k factor kind of tends to go up. If you take empty t over 2, it becomes even worse. You know, it kind of diverges much steeper than that. So basically, from our conclusion and all the scales that we have tried, indeed, HT over 4 is by far the best performing one, basically. Now, this is a plot, a recent plot taken from this paper, Pecek and Company, where they have done a resummation at next to, basically next to leading order with NNL next to leading log resummation of soft and soft collinear logs, basically, in the differential top production. So I selected their invariant mass predictions at 8 TeV here and 13 TeV here. So as their central scale, they take, at 8 TeV, they take empty T, and at 13 TeV, they take empty T over 2. Basically, what we've seen is that none of them is good. Even empty T over 4 is not good. So they find significant difference going from next to leading order to some next to leading order plus resummation. I think that basically from what we see, this difference is really not due to the resummation itself, but rather, you know, the poor and the convergence of the scale choice. I think that if one takes a different scale choice, this effect would be significantly changed, and maybe this will have to be reanalyzed, which would be very interesting to do. Again, this is our guess. Now, the PDF dependence. I mean, anyway, we mostly talked about PDF so far, which I did not expect. Yes.
One of the things that happens when you start looking at things like PT top is that you get new channels. So you get a flavor excitation, you want splitting, and so on. And I wonder whether it might be interesting. I mean, different channels may not naturally have the same scale because different physics is there. So I wonder whether it might be interesting to separate the result into different channels. And one potentially easy way of doing it, as long as you don't go too high, you need to think a little bit about it. But so, for example, you can ask the question of whether the two tops are the two hardest objects in the event, or whether there's at least one jet that's harder than one of the two tops. And that immediately gives you a separation into pieces which are present at leading order, the two tops of the hardest object, and on the other hand, topologies that are not present at leading order. And seeing those two separately might be instructive. Now, I don't know what the relative orders of magnitude, I can't remember how much they compare. And it'll be different in MTT bar, where the higher order topologies will be negligible, versus PT top, where the higher order topologies might not be so negligible.
Can't you just use PTT bar pair to select things that have two tops going one way? You want this gluon excitation kind of.
Yeah, you can do that. I mean,
another possibility.
Yeah. So I think, but I'm looking at this element, I think it's interesting for a given differential observable to say this is how much is coming from subprocess A, B, or C.
Yeah. Okay.
Right. Answer is I don't know. So the separation by processes we have not done. I know what it is for the total cross section and the forward back of the symmetry. And they're all very, especially the ones that enter at NNLO, you know, basically what is known. They're like by order or two of magnitude suppressed.
No, specifically when you go to
very differential, yes. That I do not know. Everything can be done. It would be very expensive in a way because the calculation is optimized because there are so many channels and it's all added up together to minimize calculation. But in principle, it could be done.
No, it's just it should just be just a different observer. It's PT top in the subset of events where the tops are the two hardest objects versus PT
I
top.
Mean, not in the to just pick a particular initial state, but just look at the final state. Oh yeah, yeah. I mean that one can do, of course. Yeah.
It also gives it a physical definition, which you can do experimentally as well.
I mean, we just try to look into it in the sense when we are comparing top versus T-bar in the tails, if there is a difference or not. But we didn't go too far in this comparison. But basically, we concluded for ourselves that indeed, if you go to very, very high PT, is it like two tops that are very energetic or one of them is much more dominant than the other? And somehow, I don't know, we thought that maybe it's one of them, but it was not too conclusive. But we didn't really try to fully understand the question. One thing that we tried, for example, is for the optimization of the grids in order to populate the tails, which might give some hint. So you can try to use to rescale by the average PT of the two tops versus the maximum PT of the hardest one. And there was essentially no difference in the tails. So they looked almost identical. I mean, okay, there was a little bit of a difference, but nothing like drastic, even in the tails. And the tails, I mean, up to 4 TV for the PT. So that might be a hint. That's what I know at least. All right, so what about the PDF dependence? Yes. So one thing that we notice is not very small shift from PDF set to PDF set in various observables. Everything else, just change the PDF set and what happens. Again, the changes are not like drastic, but certainly are not negligible and certainly interesting. So some examples I already showed for the total inclusive cross-section. For the differential, it's too preliminary. I didn't want to show anything in a sense. We have not even checked them, literally. Just have a look at them. I don't suspect they'll change, but still, I don't want to show it. But I can illustrate this with some Tevatron plots, which have been plotted in a paper which was published this year. So basically, yes, it's a different quite a different initial state. That's all true. So basically, what is shown here is a differential TT bar. This is the invariant mass, this is the PT, and this is the rapidity of the top. And so basically, in the absolute normalization of the distributions. Everything is normalized to MSTW 2008. In this study, we used older sets, not the most current ones, PDF sets, basically. And you see, so MSTW 2008 and its scale error is shown here, the red band, and only the central predictions for the HERA 1.5, NNPDF 2.3, and CT10, the green one. So basically, you see that just the spread between the different PDF sets is comparable to the size of the scale uncertainty of the distribution. Is that a lot? I think it's at least as big as the assume PDF error. There is no PDF error included in this plot. Now, what is more interesting is if you go to a normalized distribution. So it's exactly as before, but it's 1 over sigma, the sigma, the, let's say, MTT, and so on. So what happens is, please have a look at the scale of the error, right? So here you see this is something like plus minus roughly 5%. And when you go here, this becomes like plus minus 0.5%, right? So basically, the error, the scale error, at least gets drastically reduced when you go to the normalized distributions. And it tends to grow towards, let's say, in the case of rapidity, towards higher rapidity. And basically, you see that all the PDFs now in the normalized distributions, they're essentially identical within, I mean, 0.5% here, yeah. Despite that they had a much bigger spread in the absolute normalization. And they only tend to diverge kind of from each other towards the end, higher PT, invariant mass, or rapidity. And presumably these are the only true differences between the PDF sets which eventually one could really want to constrain. So, and use top data to constrain. So I presume something similar would happen at DOHC. We have the results, but I haven't yet plotted them, so we haven't analyzed them, so I'm not going to present them.
So these PDFs come with error sets with 50 different PDFs.
Yes.
Do you have a plot of that?
No. This is just the central, no PDF error whatsoever. Just the central member of each PDF set.
And at 1500,
The uncertainty is about 10%. And TT bar, so okay, that's not showing that much. The plot doesn't go up to 1500. I just happen to have the number cuts off around 30.
These plots are for. The bins are basically based on P0.
Ah, okay, sorry, yeah, no. Sorry. I forgot that this was temperature.
I apologize for the comparison, but this is basically what I have. But I think it's nonetheless a very interesting kind of whet the appetite kind of plot. Okay, so this is what I wanted to show about the invariant mass, and basically for the differential distribution and our understanding of scales and things like that. So if you have further comments, please let me know. But basically, based on that, this is what we intend to do. HT over 4 for anything, and M transfers over 2 for the invariant for the transverse momentum distribution. Now, just a few comments, because time is kind of short, about the top part mass. So, just literally a few comments. So, some sort of a propaganda, if you wish, introduction to that. So, these are three basically current measurements. As you can see, they're all very precise and the same error essentially, but the difference between the central values are significantly larger than the errors of each one of those. So basically, what does that mean? So personally, I believe that this is, I think, is due to different theory systematics. Somehow the errors, they do capture whatever experimental errors there are, but is that true also for the theory systematics which are there? And a lot overview of many of the methods, and there are by now, I don't know, maybe 100 that have been used for the top mass, can be found, let's say, in these papers, and there have been more recently proposed as well. So in this paper, actually, we raised a question which I think was reasonably new or unasked before. How well do we really control the theory systematics in the top mass determination? And the point was to single out the leptonic observables because they are cleaner and supposedly under better theory control, at least as far as Monte Carlos are concerned and things like that. So, we, of course, we always want to have a better M-top extraction, but somehow the motivation in this work is not so much to get the most precise top mass extraction, but rather a reliable estimate of the theory errors there. And that's why we use this kind of cleaner, theoretically observables and see how well one can do there. So, the extraction is done from shapes, not the normalization of the distributions. One of the reasons is that this way one removes basically the dependence on PDFs, as you saw in the plot which I showed for the Tevatron, what happens when you go to the normalized distributions. We only look at leptons, and basically there is no jet in the definition whatsoever. So we look all these distributions, because working with distribution might be cumbersome, at least for us. We used many moments, and we used a number of those, with, without cuts, and so on. This is a test study. Basically, what one does, you take one moment, which is one number. You can compute the top mass dependence of this moment for a number of points. I've showed some numbers. Basically, it's going to be a straight line in this interval with some error, which is, again, some straight two straight lines. Once this number is measured, you go like that and see this is basically the top mass and this is the error. That's the idea. I mean, it's been done also previously, of course. In different contexts. So basically, this is our calculation. There is a Monte Carlo error and so on for a number of top masses. We do basically the usual scale variation to estimate, as well as PDF. Okay, so that was the idea. Now, CMS just came out with a paper on this. So the first thing that I noticed, and I was really surprised, is that the analysis is done at leading order plus part of shower, which is okay, I thought we could do better than that, but eventually we should wait for, I guess, for that. So that's all I really wanted to show here. So basically, so this is taken from this paper. A good thing of this is that the experimental errors are really small, and it's very clean, backgrounds and things like that are under control, which is all really perfect. So experimentally very clean, and should be theoretically also, which is very nice, right? Now, the theory errors are very large. Now, there are a number of things to look at. So this is the theory errors, basically. So there are scale variation, of course, which is leading order, is not surprisingly rather large, more than 2 GeV, and so on. But there are also non-kind of shower, if you want, related ones. So for example, this error, as you can see, this is 1 GeV here. Comes matching scale to the shower. Now, this observable is supposed to be just 2 leptons, right? It's as sensitive, as insensitive to the shower as possible, perhaps. And yet, you know, the estimate is that, you know, it's quite sensitive, in fact, to it. Underlying event, 0.8, cover connection, okay, 510 MeV or so. So basically, this is also what we noticed with Frizione, that basically playing with the shower itself does affect this observable, despite that, you know, you are supposedly only looking at leptons and nothing else. So basically, I think that the message here is that so these kind of errors, as you can see, are in fact more than 1 GeV. So once we go to a much more tricky observables, which are actually extremely sensitive to the shower, right? How well do we control basically this kind of effects in this kind of measurements? I don't know, but I think that that should be a kind of a warning sign. Okay, so that's what I wanted to mention about the top mass. And as far as single top, I just want to have one slide. I'm not going to say much more about it. Basically, we have good calculations now. Certainly, NNLO is available for the dominant single top production there. At 7 and 8 GeV, there is a good agreement, of course, but it's hardly a precision comparison. Apparently, we'll have to wait down the road at 13 GeV in order to have a good comparison between theory and experiment. People have done a lot of work also on studying off-shell effect shower and things like that. So this is quite advanced. So it's worth thinking about down the road again, maybe if combining single top with top pair or something like that. I don't know. If one needs to do a really good study of basically top production at the LHC. I'm just raising the point. Okay, and these are my conclusions. Now, they're not so much conclusions as maybe they open another door here. one thing I told a lot about scales, but one thing I didn't mention is BLN in this case. So basically our approach is the usual scale approach, if you want. So we kind of, by definition, we stay within this approach. Everybody sort of understands, and that's what we do. There is an alternative approach that one could pursue, which we have not done here. Might be interesting. I just wanted to show you one slide. So one thing. This is from this paper. So this is the former backward asymmetry as a function of the invariant mass at the tevatron. In fact, it's, yeah, as a function of the invariant mass. Basically, this is the usual scale setting prediction at next to leading order or next to next, computed by different groups, but it doesn't matter. They're basically the same. And this is from Brodsky and company prediction based on BLN for the same thing. Basically, the difference comes just from using a different scale. As you can see, the difference is just humongous, right? So it's a point that one can get very much different predictions based on different scales, right? I mean, I should say that the scale which they use here is something like 20 GeV, which is very, very low scale. I mean, they have their justification for that. I'm not discussing it, but I'm just saying that things are extremely different, right? So even the tevatron might be able to eventually resolve the difference kind of in a convincing way, but we'll see. So that's an interesting thing to consider about the future. We have performed a study based on the usual approach, as I said, and we find that not all scales can be just used like that. Does make sense to put some, to make an effort to try to understand which scales are better and to to improve on that, because at the level of precision that we want to achieve, this question actually starts to become in a way a dominant. The difference from a static scale to a dynamic scale could be as large as between different dynamic scales in a way, so it's not a negligible question or irrelevant question. We hope that our motivation and many of our conclusions could be applicable to more processes that are not available at NNLO and beyond, and that would be great to kind of get this pushed, and certainly this workshop is a good forum for this, looking into the future. Basically, we need it in order to quantify precision. Now, as far as TTBars and future promises, basically, top production plus the KFN NLO, this should be really reasonably soon available. NLO plus QCD plus electroweak. Now, Alison mentioned, yes, in the current Monte Carlos, I guess the electroweak effects might not be large, but if you go towards higher PT, or certainly if you include the NLO QCD, electroweak effects certainly would become available. So we do plan to have such a combined prediction presented soon. And again, I mentioned that eventually, once you go to the TV regime, it starts to really make sense to calculate a priori kind of top jets. Indeed, they would be helpful because the decay details would not be as important there. But this is something in our plans, which we haven't done yet, but okay, eventually we will do. So as far as the top mass is concerned, basically all I did was I wanted to make the point is that increased precision really requires a good understanding of the theory uncertainties. We cannot extract the top mass, just we cannot measure it. It's not something that can be measured. It's not an observable. So personally, I think that there is much work left to do there. Thanks.
So is that PMC curve an NNLO PMC or
next to it in order? No, it must be next to it in order.
So it didn't quite predict the higher order corrections.
I mean, so it all depends how things are defined, numerator, denominator, that all makes a difference. So the blue and the red are our calculation of next to leading order and next to next. And this is Brodsky et al. Prediction at next to leading order. So this should correspond to the blue one, in fact, their black one. So why is it so different? I really don't know. Could be different, but it doesn't really matter. The behavior is kind of relevant. Once they go to the BLM kind of scale setting, I mean, I guess the difference, there are 2 points here. One of them is the idea behind BLM, which is interesting, very interesting. And then there how it is done in practice. I have no understanding about how it's done in practice. I could not conclude this from reading the paper. So, and that might be as much as important issue in this.
So in one of your earlier slides, you showed that for random distributions, the result for the dynamical scale agrees with the result for the fixed scale at MT plus resummation. So does this apply to higher PT or higher values of the energy?
We have noticed some result which is differential to compare. So I don't know the answer, I guess. It would be certainly interesting, and one of the reasons why we showed this prediction by Pecek et al. Was that, but the scale choice they make is really not very good in that sense. I think that if that's done in a kind of tuned way, that would be useful. And that would certainly be important once one goes for tops, not top jets, at a very high PT. Matteo Cacciari was presenting some preliminary results. And basically what he finds is that resuming the collinear log starting at maybe 2 TV or so could be a 20% effect or so, which grows rather fast after that. But this was preliminary. I don't know if this is the final result there or not. So that's certainly an interesting question.
What are the different scales, different pressure variables? You know that, for example, Kivanakis uses a different pressure variable instead of using the one for the full inclusive, he uses the one for the differential distribution. Now, have you tried to do a matching of, I mean, for the fixed order calculation, of course, it makes no difference. But for the resummation, it does. So have you tried to match fixed order calculation to a resummation with that choice of a threshold?
No. So we've not done anything for differential top production, resummation and differential ourselves. No. Eventually, I'd be, but OK. That's not immediate interest. We have done it for the total inclusive cross-section, but there, the way the resummation is done, it's kind of directly for the cross-section, for the integrated cross-section as such. So you don't start from numerically integrating the differential one when you would be sensitive to this kind of choice. This is at least how we do it, a la Bonciani et al. So that's basically what I know from my own work. What can I say now? Other people, especially when it comes to this estimation and truncations for some results, it's very messy. And so in this paper here, in fact, half the time we spent in writing the paper was to, because we wanted to do a comparison with various approximate NNO results. It turns out it was incredibly hard to do. Because, you want to take predictions, but the papers, they don't really have the predictions. So it's everything is done kind of, submitted to papers or to the experimental collaborations privately. But then, when they were plotted, there were mistakes sometimes as large as that they would actually go outside the plots if they were plotted correctly, right? It's really that bad. So it's not a very easy thing to do. I'm not very keen on repeating that soon.
I was just going to say, when you do the electroweak corrections in the future, are you going to include electroweak real radiation too?
Everything, yes. And in fact, we use the PDF sets with with QED corrections there, yes.
So you'll include the TT bar Z processes, where the Z goes hadronic, it degrades the...
What?
Nobody does this.
The radiation, yes. I'm just saying.
Well, somebody should look at it. I mean, if you say that there's big Sudikoff for not radiating.
Well, this is done. People have looked
at it. Some people have looked at it. We looked at it in some B plus jets and we found it was pretty small, but we didn't know for sure that it would be pretty small for every process.
Yeah, just adding up to it.
It's a true level. It's not hard to calculate, but you have to think about the cut dependence.
Yeah, that's right. So we always say,
we haven't done it yet, let me put it this way. So it's in the plans, the immediate plans.
It's something to think about including when you put in the virtual correction.
And so we use AMC at NLO for that. It's not a big secret, but we haven't done it yet. So.
Let me ask you about QD promises. Thought reduction plus decay of
Wait,
so is it complicated to add a decay in your code? Fabrizio have done it already.
Right.
Second decomposition, so it's the same approach you're using.
Yes. So the decay itself is not complicated to do because everything you need for the decay is publicly available. In fact, be computed by a number of groups, and we have already kind of collected all these results. So the decay by itself, it's not. The question is that you have to add it to the production in a direct way. Right? And this is a little bit awkward. It can be done, but it's a little bit awkward. So that's what we are actually doing right now. Sticking the production to the decay, because you have to disassemble it and take pieces and add them to where they should be. That's all.
I guess we're done for today. Thank you again. Thank you. Thank you again. I want to applaud.